You're listening to Who Governs, the podcast covering the comings and goings of international government in a way too tedious for The Economist and too in-depth for members of the Trump administration. Because we have a UK general election underway, it won't feature in this podcast. I'll probably do a dedicated one of those very soon. In this podcast, we will glibly hand you all the information you need to convince your friends that you shouldn't be trusted to mind their kids. We have updates from the United States, Liechtenstein, Turkey, Turkmenistan, the Marshall Islands, the Federated States of Micronesia, the Netherlands, the Republic of South Ossetia, land of the Alanians, East Timor, Bulgaria, Armenia, Ecuador, Algeria, South Korea, East Timor, and the bloody Bahamas. By God, we have a lot to cover. I can't believe I forgot Iran and France. Let's start with Iran. Like all good stories about democracy, let's start with Iran. Iran is of course still led by the Ayatollah Ali Khamenei, but the day-to-day government, the presidency, was being elected just this week. It had seemed like the hardline Ibrahim Raisi of the Competent Clergy Association might overtake the more moderate and international-looking Hassan Rouhani of the Moderation and Development Party. Despite lots of flag-waving and relatively hardline rhetoric, this was not to be. At the time of writing, Rouhani has a sizeable majority and will be returned. Iran is a particularly interesting state for elections. Any Iranian citizen over the age of 18 may register as a candidate, but with the election monitoring agency vets and filters the candidates, none of those permitted to eventually stand is a woman. Go figure. 137 women were therefore excluded from running this year. The more you know. Raisi was opposed to the nuclear openness deal with the United States, but since Rouhani has won, expect more cautious internationalism from the Islamic Republic. Speaking of the United States, who governs there? Vladimir Putin? No. Right now, President Donald J. Trump is on manoeuvres around the world, starting with Saudi Arabia, where he will be discussing human rights, civil liberties, and there's a third item, but no. He's in Saudi Arabia kvetching, if you are legally permitted to kvetch in Saudi Arabia, about how he is the most oppressed politician ever. People are being nasty about Donald J. Trump for the singular reason that Donald J. Trump is, and let's not mince words here, not very good at his job. Let's unpick that for people who've been living under a stone. But let me just say for the legal record now, allegedly. Everything that I say after this point is simply alleged. Donald Trump asked the head of the FBI for a pledge of loyalty to him, whether or not he was under investigation, and whether he could see his way to going easy on General Flynn. Go easy on who? Well, this is the guy who had been committing private diplomacy with Russia in advance of Mr. Trump's becoming president, and at around the same time as the Democratic National Committee's email system was hacked. Whilst Mr. Trump has been clear that he doesn't think Mr. Flynn was doing bad things, the Russians seem to have been boasting that their link to Flynn could influence Mr. Trump. So Mr. Trump dumped the head of the FBI and then bad-mouthed him, calling him, amongst other things, a nutjob. He then threatened him via Twitter that he'd better not have any tapes of their conversations. Mr. James Comey, for it was he, did not have any tapes of the conversation. As the director of the FBI, he knows that if you wear a wire to a meeting with a Russian spy, you lose your thumbs. Might hold up. The whole story is like a mix between those magic eye pictures and fractals, except you get more and more upset, scared, bewildered, excited, fatigued, and disillusioned the more that you see. By way of illustration, along the way, there have been press secretaries hiding amongst bushes, people covering up for the president, people denying that the president has done something, the president then going out and admitting that he had done something, and it was much worse than all of that, and then someone putting out a clarification that the press secretary was not hiding in a bush, but amongst some bushes. Low politics, mediocre farce, and hopefully, high crimes and misdemeanours. There have been so many WTF moments in the last 4 months that the suspicion must now be creeping in that there's something much worse coming down the track. And for Mr. Trump, there may well be. The relationship between the Trump campaign and the Russians is such a shitshow that the Attorney General has recused himself and his deputy has appointed a special counsel. Special counsels have a special way of turning into special investigators and then special prosecutors. And that has a habit of turning into the Star Report. And that was fairly special. Over to France, in its fifth and therefore most successful republic. It has had a presidential election, electing the best of a bad bunch, Emmanuel Macron, who has served in government pushing business reforms under President Hollande, but had until the 17th of May not served any time in elected office. No harm done. He formed a political movement, En Marche, and the day after his election, formed a new party, La République En Marche, to contest elections to the Assembly. En Marche itself is a party phage. It will draw its members overwhelmingly from the other parties in France, and nobody knows how it'll do in the elections. Monsieur Macron defeated Marine Le Pen, formerly leader of the Front National, to become the President of France. Now let's turn our minds to the roundup the other countries do in elections, democracy and stuff. In Liechtenstein, it all kicked off, leaving leader of the Progressive Citizens Party down one on 9 seats, and Thomas Zwiefelhofer of the Patriotic Union unchanged on 8 seats. Independents gained 1 up to 5, and the Free List lefties kept 3. Strong and stable in Liechtenstein. Now, I don't know about you, but when I think democracy, I think Turkmenistan. In Turkmenistan, the entirely fraudulent joke of an election surprisingly, or unsurprisingly, returned Gurbanguly Berdimuhamedow as president with 89.23% of the vote. Even if my pronunciation is wrong, I do not care. I may try it again at the end of the podcast. Say it fast, and no fanaticist gets hurt. In the Marshall Islands, 33 independents won all 33 of the seats for their National Assembly. There are parties there, but people are very cagey about their allegiances. Some of those elected are members of the United Democratic Party, or Elon Kane Ad. The Federated States of Micronesia did much the same. Fans of party politics have nothing to write home there, as all 14 seats were taken by non-partisans. In the Netherlands, Mark Rutte is the caretaker Prime Minister and is likely to keep his job, but he needs to find 3 and perhaps 4 coalition partners. The precipitous 29-seat collapse of the PVDA, the Labour Party, and the 8-seat loss of the VVD party led by Mark Rutte means no easy, comfortable coalition. The right-wing PVV party, led by that guy with the hair like a troll, Geert Wilders, didn't make the advance it anticipated, gaining 5 seats, and now the second party in the land. Good luck, the Netherlands. East Timor has elected Francisco Guterres its president and head of state. He avoided a runoff with a first round vote of 57.1% over his nearest rival. In Bulgaria, nothing is ever easy. When the centre-right GERB party didn't win the presidency, the Prime Minister, Boyko Borisov, resigned to force a parliamentary election. Risky move. A leftist coalition known as the BSP gained 41 seats to take second place on 80, while his own party picked up 11 to stay ahead on 95. Coalitions will now be the order of the day to try to secure the magic 146 required for a majority in Bulgaria, but it seems that Boyko Borisov is safe for now. In Armenia, Karen Karapetyan will stay on as Prime Minister despite his Republican Party losing 11 seats. 101 seats in the parliamentary system and dehaunt for ministerial appointments means he's safe for the foreseeable. Lenin Moreno, it will not surprise you to learn, is not a right-winger. He is also the new president of Ecuador, with a 51.16% in the runoff with Guillermo Lasso of the centrist CREO party. President Moreno's party coalition is, of course, not a party, but a citizens' revolution. Of course it is. Aleksandar Vučić is no longer the prime minister of Serbia. He is now the populist conservative president of Serbia, winning every electoral district and 56.01% of the vote. A goodie bag for Saša Janković, who scooped 16.63% in Serbia. In the Gambia, it's all change because all the parties changed their names and everything is new and different and shiny since the election of Adama Barrow as their president and the constitutional crisis occasioned by the former president refusing to leave. Anyway, after the trifling matter of the invasion by Senegal, Nigeria and Ghana to oust Yahya Jammeh, they held parliamentary elections. End result of the 53 seats, the United Democratic Party took 31. Lots of parties with optimistic and positive sounding names won smaller chunks of seats. And after the craziness of 2016 and 2017, it's easy to wish that government, parliament and country well. Now, South Ossetia, they take democracy seriously. They have decided no longer to be South Ossetia, but by a ratio of 79 to 20, to become the Republic of South Ossetia, the State of Alania. Rumours that this was an attempt to get 2 more seats at the UN in order to accommodate their sign have been strenuously denied. Whilst they were at it, the descendants of the Alan people decided to elect a new president. Anatoly Bibilov took 17,736 votes to defeat the former incumbent Leonid Tibilov on 10,909. In Turkey, the people voted to make sure the president governs fairly absolutely. The people voted by a ratio of 51.41% to 48.59% to abolish the prime minister, rewrite the old parliamentary system, and give more powers of appointment to a newly executive presidency. In Algeria, much changes and much stays the same. The National Rally for Democracy failed to liberate the people from the National Liberation Front. The governing NLF lost 44 seats, the NRD gained 32, and the New Rally for Hope for Algeria gained 19. Whilst the Movement for the Society for Peace, the Muslim Brotherhood or Hamas to its friends as usual, took 33 seats. There are 462 seats in the People's National Assembly, so the NLD should be able to cause some change in the country. We'll see. South Korea does elections properly. First past the post, single poll presidential vote. This makes things very easy, particularly if you've just defenestrated your previous president. Moon Jae-in was declared elected on 41.08% of the vote at 8:09 a.m. local time and went to parliament to be inaugurated that afternoon. No mucking around. Top class, South Korea. We salute you. Speaking of defenestrations, the Bahamas. Perry Christie's Progressive Liberal Party had 29 seats and Hubert Minnis's Free National Movement had 9 seats before the election. When the 159,910 votes were counted, Hubert Minnis's party had 35 seats and Perry Christie was out in his ear with 4. That must have been pretty horrible. Anyway, politics is a fairly painful business. Also painful, the UK general election taking place on the 8th of June, although lots of Labour MPs printed posters and leaflets suggesting it was on the 9th of June. Yes. Yes, it was stupid, wasn't it? That's Who Governs. Take care. Make some money. Who Governs is a podcast produced for the NobbyDonna.com website, written and performed by Ben Archibald. If there's anything wrong factually in this podcast, please do get in touch, ben@nabidana.com. And the music today was Polka Madre performing Amsterdam.